You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
A quarter of the way through the season, the Indiana Pacers have won two-thirds of their games after a 107-100 victory against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Pacers led after one, trailed after two, but managed to take a third quarter lead and carried that to the fourth quarter, all thanks to a nice performance by TJ Warren, who had 24 points on 9 of 15 shooting, including two closeout free throws. You had Domantas Sabonis, who had 17 points and 13 rebounds. He was followed by, on the bench, Doug McDermott, who had 14 points. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they were led by Steven Adams' perfect shooting night with 20 points and 9 rebounds. He was followed by Danilo Gallinari's 18 points and 6 rebounds. And off the bench, Dennis Schroeder also had 18 points and 4 rebounds. But all of that was not enough, as 7 Pacers scored double figures as to hold on to a fourth quarter lead this time late in the game. The Pacers have now 14 wins and are nipping at the heels of the 5-seeded Sixers and the 4-seeded Raptors. Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, one of the co-hosts of this wonderful podcast. And today I'll bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers' win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. And for those of you who will stick around to the second segment of the podcast, I have a wonderful, written-out segment on Miles Turner. But first, take a quick break. So the good, bad, and ugly from tonight's Pacers win. So there's a lot more good than bad and ugly. Let's start there. Let's start with the first good of the night was TJ Warren, obviously. He led the team in scoring with 24 points on 9 of 15 shooting. And he continues this, we'll call it a 6-game tear, since he had his miserable 2-point night against Orlando. A game where he was just, I mean, let's be honest, just flat out awful. And that kind of capped a 4-game stretch where he shot below 35% for 4 straight games. Well, he's returned to form. So, in all but one of the last 6 games, he's shooting above 55%. And that one is a 45% game on 5-11 shooting. So, that's good. And more importantly, his 3-point shooting has just kind of shot up in the air. So, from basically the Memphis game at home last Monday to tonight's game, he goes 3 of 5, 2 of 4, 1 of 2, 4 of 4, 4 of 6, 1 of 3 from 3. He has continued to push his 3-point percentage way, way, way up. So at one point, I know he was shooting below 30%. That was his average. He is now up to 41% on the year from 3. Yeah, 41% all of a sudden. I mean, that's how good he's been in the last 6 games, give or take. From 3, he's been awesome. He continues to sort of kind of be the, I would call him the linchpin of his offense in a way. I mean, he's the kind of player who, when they just need a bucket, they need a guy, you know, drop a play for somebody, it's kind of for him. I mean, even credit that really that Turner 3 was set up by him in a way. So it just kind of be the focal point of the offense. And because they have such a wide variety of scoring opportunities and players who can kind of all score on their own, it has created this sort of opportunity for him where even though he is probably the best scorer on the team one-on-one, he's not defended that way all the time because they have so many good offensive players out in the court with him when he's playing with a Turner and a Lamb and a Brogdon, basically, and Turner in a little bit. It's a bonus, obviously. So that brings me to kind of my next good, and that is the Pacers' double-digit scoring continues to kind of go up and up and up in terms of how many players are double figures. So tonight they had 7 players in double figures. I believe that matches a season high. It might have been 8 in one of the games. But so Justin Holiday had 12, McDermott had 14, Lamb had 13, Brogdon had 11, Turner had 12, Warren obviously 24, and Sabonis 17. This even distribution, this is kind of the picture of their best, right? When they've got 7 guys who all can be threats, and we're talking about. So a quick scan shows basically the only player shoot under 50% tonight that scored in double figures was Brogdon, who was 4 of 13, who I believe started the game 4 of 5, because he had 10 points in the first quarter. So not very good last 3 quarters, but a very good first quarter. When they have this kind of scoring, obviously, they're probably unbeatable when they have this kind of even distribution, when they hold the team to like 100 or less points. I mean, let's put it this way, it becomes extremely hard to beat this team when they're playing like this. Now, the question is, can they sustain this? But right now, it feels like this team, you know, with an Oladipo return in the wings, it's one of the deeper Pacer teams, at least in the last 20 years, right? I mean, I'm talking 2012-13 was 9 players deep. 2004 was probably 7 or 8 deep, and back then that was a lot considering you probably played your starters 40 minutes anyways. So, and this team is probably like, I mean, at least 7 deep, and honestly, McConnell and Holiday can play better. Yet Sumner makes them like 10 deep. So this Pacer team is basically found a way where they can almost beat you with an evenness, right? Just because everybody can beat you on the court at once, it becomes almost impossible to figure out how to guard that. You know, it's a lot of like one-on-one matches, which plays right into the Pacers' hands because they have a lot of one-on-one players. Even, you know, we saw Brogdon in the first half, who I think is probably the least one-on-one player in the sense because he's not like, you know, he's got the moves where he can, you know, use a pick and roll as a bonus to shimmy a defender off, which he did earlier with Nerlens Noel. But frankly, he's probably the worst one-on-one player. That or Turner probably is another pretty bad one-on-one player. But those guys are effective because they're surrounded by three one-on-one players. And because there's all that talent, you can't double-team Sabonis for them because then you really turn wide open, boom, he hits the three, right? He's shooting something like 40% from three this year, which is a hugely valuable thing for this team. And Brogdon, if you leave him alone, he's shooting, you know, 48% from the field. He's going to find a way to get kind of a one of his little signature bank shots, you know, from 10 feet or a layup somehow, or, you know, he'll figure out how to create his own shot, essentially, if you leave him open. So there's no opportunity for anybody to do that. And then when you go to the bench, you can't do it with McDermott or Holiday, Justin Holiday, that is. So it just opens up everything for this team when you've got five really threatening players in the court at one time, which is something the Pacers haven't had in I don't know how many years, and it's really kind of refreshing, right? There's nobody you can just kind of leave alone. I think teams are going to start trying to leave Turner alone in the corner, but I think that's kind of probably not going to work if he's going to continue to shoot 40% from three. I mean, if he has a grand to shoot four threes a game and he's open for, let's say, it ends up being five or six some games, but he makes two or three of them, then basically it's worth it. You know, teams are going to keep doing it because teams are going to have to stop doing that because that's such an efficient rate that it's not worth it. You're better off maybe hoping your defender can guard one-on-one or whatnot. So we'll see how teams adjust this team, but that continues to kind of be a bright spot for this Pacers team is their ability just to be kind of even across the board in terms of scores. A bad. Sabonis' foul trouble continues. So he had five fouls. If you remember right, he had six fouls, fouled out of the game against the 76ers on Sunday. He fouled out of the Memphis game as well. Now, that didn't matter as much, but he obviously fouled out of that game. So if you take like his last, let's pull it up real fast, last three games, it's five fouls, six fouls, six fouls. Now, he did have a decent run against Atlanta, Utah, Memphis. But then it's four fouls against Orlando, four against Brooklyn. That's kind of his last 10 games. The last three have just been, I mean, I don't know. I can kind of guess why he's getting called for all these fouls. I mean, he's really banging down low, especially in the against Steven Adams and against Joel Embiid. And Horford, he really has to kind of fight for things, and that gets called for a lot of fouls in those. He's playing out of position, obviously, at the four, so it makes it harder for him. So there are reasons for this, but he has got to stay out of foul trouble because I think there's a pretty good case you make if he finishes that Philly game, they probably win it. He is a key player down the stretch. Like I just said, he's a key player because they need five offensive threats out there at one time. And when they, you know, when you put Justin Holiday in for Sabonis, theoretically Justin Holiday is a decent offensive threat, but he's no Sabonis level threat. Sabonis is like a defender where he runs a pick and roll. You can't leave him alone with the ball at the center because he can pass off the double team. He reads that very well, or he can just roll to the rim and dunk on you because he's kind of that efficient of a player. So he's out of sight of foul trouble. That was kind of a bad pronouncing game. I think he continues to kind of be in foul woes now. Might be a road trip thing, right? So they have two more road games until that finishes out. You know, the home stretch, he wasn't as bad at home. That might be a friendly whistle at home. Who knows? Whatever it is, he's having foul trouble for three games. And when he's in foul trouble, the Pacers tend to play closer games than they should or tend to lose games they shouldn't. So that's where I am on that one. That was my first bad night. Now, the ugly. It's less an ugly from any particular player and just ugly from the fact that it seems like Goga with a healthy team is out of the rotation. Now, I don't know if this is going to be, you know, it was just a one-time thing or whatnot because of whatever reason, but it feels like when the Pacers are at their best, and this is fine because Goga's a rookie, that they're better off staggering Sabonis Turner the way they did tonight where they basically took Sabonis out about the 6 or 7 minute mark of the third and first quarter and then brought him back in with 2 or 3 minutes left and just letting him kind of be the bench focal on offense to carry in the offensive consistency. Now, Quinn Buckner mentioned something I thought was interesting, how he said Chuck McMillan. McMillan wanted a lot of that because he felt that Sabonis could kind of continue the offensive, you know, they go on this run, start the third quarter, and he could continue it off for the bench unit by being out there with him and McDermott kind of be the offensive threats. And you've seen Goga the last kind of three games is really, you know, minutes come down and down, right? Atlanta, he played 4 minutes. Philly, he played five. Memphis, he played three. Tonight, he played zero. Talking about a four-game run where he's really just playing first half and not playing second half. And that's where Goga is still raw talent and hasn't quite figured out. And frankly, the Pacers team is deep enough they can do this. That's part of it. So, you know, I imagine we'll see a Turner or Sabonis get hurt at some point for a few games, knock on wood, they don't. But I imagine, you know, big lumbering guys always get hurt for three or four games. So we'll see Goga again, play minutes and whatnot. But for now, Goga's going to kind of be on the bench. I think it's okay. He's a rookie. This is what happens. But it is ugly to see him out there. You know, I saw him on the bench with his feet stretched out. It's just kind of sad. He didn't look super happy on from the TV. Now, I mean, that's just barely reading anything into it. But I'm sure as a rookie, this is a good lesson for him. You know, it's good to sit on the bench, learn, study, you know, Sabonis, study Turner, because if he can become the mold of those two players, that's an awesome player. So, you know, he's got somewhere to go. I'm not, you know, concerned about Goga or anything like that. I think he definitely proved that he has some skill set to make him an NBA player, but he's getting some of the Aaron Holiday treatment, right? He'll probably get a 10 or 15 game stretch here where he will be, did not play coach's decision or whatever or whatnot, or less minutes than he should, than he maybe wants to play. But, you know, when you're on a good team, that's what happens, and he'll learn, and hopefully next year he'll get some minutes because he'll prove himself in the time he does. He is out in the court, which he has this year a little bit. You know, when he plays some minutes, he just proved himself. He's been up and down. He's had a couple of kind of iffy games, but he had some flashes, right? In a couple of games where he played 20-plus minutes, he had 10 points and 13 points, and one he had 10 rebounds also. So he's shown flashes. Not a concern, I think, but it was the ugly from tonight's game. Back to another good. Brogdon's first quarter. Now, this could turn into a bad and ugly because he was really bad the next three quarters in terms of scoring. But he started off extremely hot. He seemed like he was going to, you know, was going for a 30-point game. He finished with 11 points. But that first quarter was, I think, critical to the Pacers in a way because it sort of set the tone for the rest of the game. And the fact that he had 10 of the team's 26 first-quarter points, that's basically almost half of them, helped really carry that team. And, frankly, you know, I think even when he does struggle, which he was 4 of 13, he's still an effective player because he's still respected as a 50-40-90 guy. Now, eventually this will change, right? If he, you know, he is only shooting 33% from three, and tonight he was 2 of 4, so actually that will go up. So maybe that will help him in terms of his, like, kind of box score stats. But eventually teams will stop respecting him as much. But I still think even when he's 4 of 13, he garners a lot of respect. He can still make the, you know, the great pass. He had 6 assists. You know, he'll continue to be, you know, the 6 to 8 assist kind of guy every night, no matter what. So, you know, I think good first quarter, bad next two quarters, pretty good fourth quarter close for the Pacers. Although he did go 1 of 2 in the line the end of the game, which is very rare for Brogdon. You know, a rare missed free throw. I think only like his second or third miss this season. Other goods real fast. So McDermott on the bench continues to have, you know, I would call a career season. Talking about a guy who basically is averaging a career high in points except for, you know, a small Chicago. But, you know, compared to the minutes he's playing and the role he's playing, he has been amazing. I think his per 36 are probably the best of his career. Let's look at those real fast. They're up there. He actually had a really good per 36 last year too, but considering he's playing more minutes than last year and putting up more points and really just being a more effective, I would say, shooter because he's shooting 43% from three. And tonight he was two or three from three, so that will continue to go up. So another good night for him. McConnell, not a great shooting night, but another nice eight assists. Continues to be the much-needed kind of facilitator off the bench. Just seems to know where guys are going to be and set him up, right? So did earn himself some good minutes. Some bad. You know, I looked at Oklahoma City here, and really it was how much Steven Adams bullied really Sabonis and Turner. Now, box score-wise, I'm surprised. Actually, Sabonis ended with more rebounds than Adams. It seemed like Adams was all over the place all night. He had, five offensive rebounds compared to most had five as well. But Adams was just all over the place. It felt like he could get pretty much any shot he wanted to. He, out there to me, feels like he's playing a different game than most of the team. He's just, his size-wise, he's just a big player. I mean, he's just a big dude. But you know, he tends to do this to the Pacers. Now, luckily, the rest of the Oklahoma City team is not very good, so they're able to kind of make up for it elsewhere. But really, up and down the Thunder's roster, the bench was positive for the Thunder, obviously. But really, on the starters, Adams was the closest thing to being positive at a minus 2. Everybody else was minus 4, minus 6, minus 8, and minus 19 for Shai Gilgeous, who played the most minutes. Obviously, he'd be the worst plus minus. So, yeah, the Pacers still have to figure that out. There seems to be a level of center, right? So, like, I wouldn't even call Adams one of the best, maybe 5 centers, maybe he's in that 5 to 10 range, but they're somewhere at like 7 or 8 where then Turner's bonus come into center level and they're better than everybody else, but those 7 are like always better and consistently will have a better game than Sabonis or Turner. And there's a case you could say Sabonis had a better game than Adams, but Adams just felt like he was in control when he wanted to be. The problem is he's got not very good guards there to help him out. The last good before I take a break, and we had to find something about Miles Turner, is Jeremy Lamb. Continues to sort of just be solid. 6 of 11, 13 points. Should let you guys know I picked him in fantasy basketball because I thought he's just a consistent player. The Pacers play four times a week, so that's always a positive for me. But continues a really good run to return from injury. So to read some numbers off since he returned. So he returned on the 25th, and he's got 19 points then, 18 points, 20 points, 15 points, and 13 points. I believe he doesn't have a game this season where he hasn't scored double figures. I think that is correct, as I searched this real fast. Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens when he becomes sort of the bench leader, the bench unit guy. Especially when you get some of him and Sabonis together, combined with a little bit of McConnell and a little bit of McDermott. That'll be really exciting. But there's to fill in the Vic role, just doing an adequate job, you know, an efficient score. Wonder what is so if you look at just like his season average right now, he's at 49% from the field, and he's only 30% from three, but 49% overall, averaging about 17 points per game. So continues to be just a good player consistently every night and being an important part of, I would call, the Pacers machine as they head towards now a 14-7 record, and they trail by, I think, about a game and a half for like fifth in the East. And so they might, you know, we'll see if one of these East teams comes back to earth. I'm going to put my money on the Miami Heat to do that, but we will see what happens. I think the Heat are prime candidates to fall back to earth and maybe, you know, not be 15-6, but end up being, you know, by game, let's say 35, 22-13 or 23-12 now. We'll see. Maybe the Raptors also come back to earth too, but they've been playing really well with Siakam. But the Pacers actually have a better plus minus than both the Heat and the Sixers. So maybe those teams will kind of come back to the Pacers level. And then by then we might get a little Vic return by game 35 or 40, but we will see. But first, let's take another break, and then I'm going to talk about another important piece of the Pacers machine. Okay. All right, Miles Turner, I'm with you, and more power to you. So if you haven't noticed, the Pacers center deleted all his social media posts after Saturday's loss to the 76ers. And the story is a lot simpler than what everybody made it out to be. He played terrible, shocked. Did not want to be on social media with a, you know, known troll and honestly somebody who I think is becoming borderline just frankly annoying in Joel Embiid. And basically said he doesn't need it right now. And like most of us, we should be saying that. So it's pretty obvious, right? So social media can be pretty rough for public figures. Now, I would not know that. I only have 700 followers. Now, if you want to follow me to get my count up, that'd be great. But no, I only have 700 followers, so I wouldn't know what it's like to be an NBA player in the shoes of those guys for sure. But it's pretty obvious that social media can be toxic at times. And if you aren't really living in that reality, then you should really try to click on some of the, you know, find your favorite NBA player, click on a tweet of it, and see all the responses. But doesn't say there isn't value in Twitter, right? So, like, there can be certainly insightful things from the Pacers Twitter mob when you're watching a game to understand what's going on. You can point things out. You can talk stats. You can talk up your players. It's all good things. Those are all positive things. It's even good for kind of speculating future trades, you know, when the return of a superstar might come back, like Victor Oladipo, or obviously, like, memes and jokes, right? So, the Victor Oladipo laser eyes were a great, great thing that, honestly, Twitter kind of created. I mean, Twitter, Reddit, kind of that sphere created. But there obviously are some pretty dark spots on Twitter. Between sort of some of the, I call them bots and stands accounts, it can be pretty hard and pretty rough to take, right? So a player like Miles Turner, I'm sure, takes a lot of beating from guys who see him as somebody who he's not. He's been playing in the shadow of the Larry Bird comment that he could be the best player in the league someday for the better part of 4 years now. I'm going to break some news that even Miles Turner will admit, but he's not going to be the best player in the league someday. But he is still a very good, very valuable NBA player. Certainly, he played terrible on Saturday. He'll be the first to admit that. 1 of 8 is not good. He should be better. He will probably be better in the future. But does not mean he's not one of the best 7 of 10 centers in his league, not worth his contract, and shouldn't be on this Pacer team because they need him. He might have a diminished role on offense right now. Okay, they still need him. He might be the fifth best offensive player on the team. He frankly is right now when on the court most times, but they still need him. You know why? He is probably their best defender, if not in their top two or three defenders, depending on Oladipo comes back. Certainly Brogdon can be up there, but Turner is the man who makes their defense run. He can guard almost every position when he needs to. He can be switching anybody and guard them. He can defend the rim. He does all the little things. Yes, he doesn't have the gaudy 15 and 14 stats, certainly. Sabonis has been really good this year and has really gaudy stats, right? Sabonis has like 17 points per game and like 14 rebounds per game. Drummond has 25 points per game and 20 rebounds per game or something crazy like that. And Turner, frankly, has a 12 and 6 season. Not fantastic by any means, but he has the lowest defensive rating on this team, and he sort of is the cog that makes the Pacer machine run. Without him, this team is really missing a crucial piece. It's honestly why when he doesn't play, it feels more significant than if a guy like Jeremy Lamb or TJ Warren or even Victor Oladipo being out around doesn't play. Now, don't get me wrong. Vic takes his team to another level when he's out there, but the replacement guard, as in the backup guards, are adequate enough to fill in for the time being while when Goga comes in, it is just nowhere near the level of Turner. Yes, certainly they won without him. Sabonis played great. Sabonis played out of his freaking mind for the five games Turner wasn't there, and they won. Certainly won some games without him. They also lost a game to the Charlotte Hornets they probably should have lost without him. Whatever. That isn't really what it's about. Frankly, on defense, he is the machine, or the call that keeps the machine running, right? He is the one who is there to be the safety net for any player who misses an assignment and wants to get going to the rim. He also is the reason the Sabonis-Turner pairing is actually starting to work, right? We'll give both players credit, because certainly you should, but Turner is the one who sacrificed offensively a significant amount. He basically has been relegated to the corner, but he's been okay with that. You know why? Because they've been a plus 4.5 on the court together, basically mirroring the team's 5.4 net rating as a team, right? He's okay with that. He's okay sitting in the corner and being the guy who stretches the floor, who takes 4 threes a game and makes 40% of them, which is an incredibly high number for a center. He is the perfect player for the role he's in. He's perfect for this team, and when he's the fourth best player on this team, which I'm going to put him behind Sabonis, behind Brogdon, behind Oladipo, that is the perfect role for him because it means that this team is at a level where they can compete. Yes, he will never be as good as Joel Embiid probably, but that doesn't matter because Joel Embiid has to be his team's best player because he has a guy like Ben Simmons who can't shoot around him. He's got a guy like Al Horford who's aging. Turner doesn't have that. Turner's got 23-year-old Sabonis next to him. He's got 27-year-old Victor Oladipo next to him. He's got 26-year-old Malcolm Brogdon next to him. He's got 25-year-old DJ Warren, I think. 24-year-old Jeremy Lamb. I think Lamb's 24. Might be off an edge there. He has all those guys next to him who can help supplement the offense. Embiid does not. Embiid plays on a team where there isn't a lot of offensive power. Yes, they did score 119 against the Pacers, and there is some offensive power on the Sixers. Don't get me wrong. They're not like just nothing. But Turner is not going to be Embiid, and that's okay. Because Turner is going to be Miles Turner, and he is what the Pacers need right now. And honestly, with the right amount of healthy players and a certain player not fouling out, the Pacers probably beat the Sixers, and Turner has a bad night. Everybody moves on and forgets it, and whatever. Yes, Turner has to play better at the end of games. Certainly has to make better decisions. But at the end of the day, he's not going to be the guy with the balls when it matters, and he's going to fit. He's going to be the guy out there stretching the floor, making sure when a guy, Victor Oladipo or Malcolm Brogdon, tries to win the game, that the center on him, the four on him, whatever, if it's Horford or Embiid, is far away from the rim, they can get to the rim. A guy, Oladipo, Brown, can get to the rim and score and win the game. That's his goal. That's his purpose. And he's fulfilling that purpose, and it's okay. He had a bad game. Certainly. He will admit that. We can all admit that he had a bad game. Doesn't mean he needs to be traded. Doesn't mean he needs to be shipped to the bench. Doesn't mean both needs to be the starter now at center, and they need to play small ball the whole way. None of that is what happened Sunday. What happened Sunday was a bad game. It was a back-to-back. Turner will play better, hopefully. And if he plays the way he played Sunday, hopefully he'll be supplemented by guys not fouling out and a superstar for Oladipo returning. So Turner, Miles Turner, I'm with you. Get off social media. Better for your health. Better for you. That way you don't listen to all the trolls and you keep playing the basketball you're playing because the heel will be fine. The Pacers will be fine. And a great example was tonight's game where he had a huge three. The Pacers were up, I think, one. Maybe not even up, but he had a huge three to kind of extend the lead and really steal the game for the Pacers. That's what he does. That's what we continue to do, and we'll be okay with the role he's in. Just don't expect him to be Joel Embiid, and we'll all be okay. Expect him to be that 40 to 50 best player in the league and the fourth best player on this team at times, and that's okay. He's making, he's okay with that role, and that's the role he should be in, and it's all good. End of rant. All right, that's been today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, my name is Adam Friedman. You can follow me at Twitter at FriedmanAdam5. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow my co-host Tony's at TEastNBA. We'll bring you a new podcast tomorrow previewing the weekend's games. But for now, great rest of your day. We'll see you guys again tomorrow.